From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Deborah Threedy says her play, The Third Crossing, started with a question. A question about Thomas Jefferson and his slave, Sally Hemings. We now know Jefferson had an ongoing relationship with Hemings, that they had a number of children together, but you'd have to guess about the nature of that bond and the particulars. This is what prompted Threedy's question. How could two people have some kind of intimate connection for some 38 years when one in the relationship actually owned the other? And she wondered, what was life like for Hemings? Today in the program, we're profiling The Third Crossing, which is opening this week in Salt Lake City. It's more than just a dramatic history piece. It's also about the larger story of interracial relationships in this country, then and now. Gets at love and identity and the question of whether we've actually moved beyond race. After the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Kaylin West plays the character of Sally Hemings in the latest production of the Plan B Theater Company. Hemings was Thomas Jefferson's longtime companion and lover, and of course, slave. But we don't really know that much about Sally. Aside from some officious notations about his farm, Jefferson didn't really write about her, and she didn't write much about herself either. Didn't pen a memoir or even a diary or even, as far as we can tell, letters. In the play, we hear that Sally's identity has been constructed for us through rumors and innuendos and scandal. And as she prepared for the role, Kaylin West had questions. How did Sally feel about Jefferson, about her situation? Was she angry? Was she happy? Did she love him? Those are the same kinds of questions that prompted Deborah Threedy to write the play in the first place. Threedy says there are two parts to the play. One is the story that she imagines of Tom and Sally. The other part brings the story to the present, the larger questions of interracial relationships in America. Have we really moved beyond race in the 21st century? Is that even possible? The play is called The Third Crossing, and today in the program we're talking about it. We invite you to join us as well. Questions or comments, 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Deborah Threedy is a playwright whose work has been performed around the state. Her plays The End of the Horizon about Everett Roos and Wallace about Wallace Stegner, premiered with the Plan B Theater Company. She has a day job, also a law professor at the University of Utah. Deborah Threedy, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having us.
Jerry Rapier is with us. He directs Plan B Theater Company's production of The Third Crossing. This is his 12th season as Plan B's producing director. And Jerry, welcome back to you.
Thanks. For being with us.
I'll introduce the actors as we go along here, but Deborah Threedy, I wanted to start with you because you've written about the thing that got you started. You've been thinking about this a long time.
A long, long time, yes.
So what was the thing? You said that, and I mentioned this in the introduction earlier, that it started with a question. But what about the question? I mean, what was the thing that got you thinking about this, that triggered the question in the first place, do you think?
Probably reading a novel called Sally Hemings, which immediately appealed to me because it was looking at history from the outside in. In other words, from an outside perspective, meaning the perspective of someone who wasn't important to history. Sally Hemings, a black woman in a historical period where both of those were relatively powerless positions. And so I'm always interested in a fuller picture of history, which you only get if you listen to more than one voice about history.
Yeah. But then you played with it a little bit. You wrote it. You passed it around to people. And then it went into a drawer or something.
It did indeed. For almost 10 years.
Why? You just couldn't work it out? Or what was going on?
There were two problems. One was my problem in the sense that I actually became afraid that I didn't have the right to tell this story, that it wasn't my story.
Wait, what does that mean? Because you're white?
Because I'm white.
Yep. Okay.
And it took me a long time to process that and to come to the point where I'm going, wait a minute. Race in this country affects all of us. It's our problem. It's not somebody else's problem. It's our problem, and I have as much right to talk about it as anybody else. The other problem was artistic, in that the first version of the play which is still pretty much there, but it was all the Monticello scenes, all the scenes between Sally and members of the extended Jefferson family. And it started to feel too precious, too much like a little historical play.
Yeah, and a big period piece.
A period piece, you know, masterpiece theater. and the thing I didn't want was an audience to be able to walk out of this play going, oh, well, that was then. This is now. Things are very different now. We don't have to worry about any of that anymore, because it's not true.
There's this jarring moment where Thomas Jefferson gives a lecture. But but he taps on a lavalier mic, right? In a modern day, I guess, a modern day, I mean, it's kind of jarring. And that's one kind of technique that you use to bring us to the present. Talk about that.
Yep. Once I decided that this wasn't going to be a historical piece, and once I started bringing in all these other stories that in my mind resonate with the Thomas Jefferson Sally Hemings story, I also then went back and looked for ways to disrupt the Sally, Tom Jefferson, other Monticello. I mean, Sally talks in this play in a way that I doubt very much that the historical Sally would ever have talked. She talks, she's real lippy with Patsy, who is Thomas Jefferson's oldest daughter. Yeah. And I doubt, you know, very much that a black house slave would last very long if she were sassy with her, you know, white mistress. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But
so you didn't worry about the language. That didn't matter to you.
Nope. And to convey that to the audience, to really, you know, bring that to them, I started looking for things like the mic. Yeah. And at the end, Sally saying, there's going to be a movie about my life, just to say, keep in mind, audience, this is not history. This is not historical. This is happening now. This is today.
Jerry Rapier, what is it that interested you about the story? What in particular did you think worked for your theater company that you deal with? You know, you deal with these sort of present moment social issues. So you immediately saw the relationship to today?
Well, of course, and certainly here in this state where there's such a difficulty in having the right vocabulary to talk about race at all. But specifically, I think political correctness can go overboard. And so it's generally those of us involved in the production that are not white have been talking about how generally the greatest offense to racial slurs and other things come from bleeding heart liberal white people, right? That those of us who've actually experienced it, and my experience is nowhere near what some other people's have been, we have tools to deal with it. And so it's immediate, and it's not even once removed. It's our experience, and so it's a little bit different. But beyond the topicality and the conversation about race, it's just the highly theatrical style that Deborah has created. I think she has this uncanny ability with the work that we've done to make history accessible by not letting history be precious, letting us explore it, inviting us to explore it in the way that makes sense to us. And so constantly, anytime you get too involved in the play reminds you that it's a play. Yeah. That we are
in referencing you as the audience. That happens from time to time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. There's a moment about halfway through the play where literally a character that Carlton Bluford plays invites the audience to sing along with him because they're probably bored by that point. you know, it's very anachronistic and in a way that actually helps us get more involved in the piece. You know, very Brechtian in that way.
Yeah, yeah. So. So, Deborah, before we move on, I did want to ask about that question of, because, you know, I'm sure it came up to you early on, this idea of how dare you as a white woman try to imagine the life of Sally Hemings. How did you move past that? I mean, you said, I figured, you know, we're all involved in this, but you're still writing the character of a woman, you know, a black woman in a situation that's incredibly complex.
Mm-hmm. It is. And I think one of my entrees in was when I started thinking about Sally's children who crossed the color line and became white, and I'm, and you can't see this on the radio, but I've just done the little
air quotes.
Air quotes. I'll talk for you.
There may be a lot of air quotes in this show. I'll do those.
Which led me to start contemplating that there are a lot of people in this country who think they are white, who, in fact, if you subscribe to the one drop rule, aren't white, they're black. Indeed, in this play I had distributed to a reading group here in town, and one of the women in the reading group came, and they invited me to come talk about the play with them. And one of the women in the reading group, who is a perfectly ordinary white woman, you know, white LDS woman on top of everything else, you know, shared this story about how they'd been on vacation in Kansas and realized that they were close to the town that her great-great-grandfather had come from. And they so they decided to drive through the town and go to the cemetery and see if they could find any family relations. And they did, in the black cemetery in town. And it turns out that her great-great-grandfather had crossed the color line when he moved to Utah. You know, so that resonated with me because my great-grandfather is a man of mystery. Nobody knows where he grew up or where he came from. And writing this play, I found myself going, could that be? It could.
Yeah.
It could.
I want to ask about this kind of bizarre mathematical equation that Thomas Jefferson comes up to explain race. And it gives us, of course, the title to the play. Let me introduce Bob Nelson. We'll talk about your portrayal of Thomas Jefferson as we go, but I want to get you to read this this moment from the play. Bob is making his Plan B debut, we should say. He plays Thomas Jefferson, teaches theater at the University of Utah, is retired as chair of theater and media arts at Brigham Young University. And Bob, welcome, first of all. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much for having us.
Deborah, what shall we say about this scene? There's this is the equation. And in the play, he's sort of actually working it out for people on a on a blackboard.
This scene is taken almost word for word, kind of edited for understandability, but pretty much word for word from a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote. So it's his formula.
Here it is then, a scene from the play, The Third Crossing.
I've been asked to explain what constitutes a Negro by our law. The true canon is that at least one-fourth Negro blood constitutes the Negro. As the child has one-half of the blood of each parent, and the blood of each parent may be made up of a variety of fractional mixtures, it becomes an intricate mathematical problem. Let me illustrate by way of an algebraic formula. Let us put the pure blood of the Negro in small letters and the pure blood of the white in capital letters. The first crossing is of pure white with pure Negro. And as each parent contributes half of the blood of the offspring, we'll divide each of these by two. This will give us the half-blood. Now, if the second crossing is Negro half-blood and pure white, and we substitute its mathematical equivalent, we get Q for quadroon, or one-quarter Negro blood. Then, if the third crossing is a quadroon and a pure white, we have O for octoroon, or one-eighth of pure Negro blood. Now, O, having less than one-fourth Negro blood, is no longer, according to the true canon, a Negro. So, in law, three crossings will clear the offspring of the Negro blood.
So this reflected the kind of gymnastics that they were going through in those times, right, to sort of figure out and explain how this all worked.
Yeah.
But the irony here is so interesting, of course, is that even though his children were technically white, he, as he says in the play, the third crossing of the Negro blood does not establish freedom. Mm-hmm. This play is full of irony.
Oh, yes. And I mean, another level of irony is that this whole mathematical formula, which was the law at Thomas Jefferson's time, pretty soon gets dropped. because there start being lots of octoroons wandering around, and they became very threatening to the establishment in the sense of here was this person who was a light-skinned Negro, but often still recognizably Negro, and yet under the law, they were white. So if you looked black, but you were white, what did that do to whiteness? How could you be sure somebody was white or black? So it got changed. By the time, 50 years after Jefferson writes that letter, it's been changed to one drop is the rule.
Yeah.
So one drop of black blood, you know, taints you and you are now a Negro.
It's so interesting that in the beginning of the play, there's this feminist academic who is giving us this exposition, and I want to talk about this character as we go, but she talks about how people were really curious about this mixing. Like, how does it work? What's going to happen if you do? What would happen if the races mix? How would it turn out? What would a child look like? They were, I guess, endlessly curious about the possibilities. And what? Why? Because they're worried about how their particular pure sense of race is going to be threatened or affected?
Yes, diluted.
Diluted, yeah.
I think there was a hope. And you got to remember, one of the justifications for slavery is that, and of course, is a little white girl sitting next to one of my cast, Dee Dee's. This is making me very uncomfortable to say these things.
Dee Dee has that effect. She just takes over the room.
One of the justifications for slavery is that black people weren't really human. They were a different species. I mean, that's where the whole notion of race arose. We, meaning white people, were trying to think that, well, you know, these black people weren't really the same as us. They were somehow very fundamentally different, so fundamentally different that maybe if a white person had sex with a black person, the offspring, like with mules, right? A mule has a donkey and a horse as a parent, but every mule is sterile. Mules don't reproduce. They thought maybe that was going to happen with the offspring of white and black crossings. Wrong.
Yeah.
Didn't work that way.
I think your sense of discomfort with Dee Dee there is really telling. And I'm wondering, let me bring Dee Dee Darby Duffin into the conversation. She plays Mildred Loving and other characters in the play. This is her debut with the Plan B Theater Company. We should say also she's also performed in Utah with the African American Theater Company, People Productions, and with Pygmalion Productions as well. And she plays Professor Sloan, as I said, among others, and Mildred. And welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Doug.
So, what was it like and I'll involve the other members of the cast too, but it's interesting that Deborah feels so uncomfortable in some ways. And I'm wondering if during the production, Jerry, you can sound off on this too, if there was this sense of discomfort about this. And I think if that reveals something about the way we're still uncomfortable about all of this. You first, Dee Dee, what do you think?
I wasn't particularly uncomfortable with most of the characters, but you know, as an African American actor, especially in Utah, you know, when I read the script, I went, "Oh God, another slave." But then you dig deeper, and I read the script, and I thought this is an important story, as are all the stories that are being told, all the voices that never had an opportunity to be heard before. Those are all important stories, but does it get trying and a little telling sometimes to continue playing a slave? Yeah, sometimes it does. But I think that this was an important enough story to kind of don that role again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Dee Dee does play Professor Sloan, the feminist academic. And unfortunately, we live in a world where that gives people pause as well. Mm-hmm. How can a black woman be smart enough to be an academic, much less of that caliber? It's shocking to me to hear people say that. But those things are said.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Can I jump in here to say that Professor Sloan is actually modeled on a real woman. Her name is Professor Suzette Spencer. She's a professor of English, and she has written about Sally Hemings. And a lot of what Professor Sloan says I've borrowed from things that Suzette Spencer has written about Sally Hemings. So, yeah, people might be taken aback, but they sure shouldn't be.
But I guess, again, the question that why this is – maybe people are going to be squirming a little bit by the language, even the word Negro – You know, I mean, it's so fraught, these conversations about race, which shows how relevant, I guess, it still is, of course.
Yeah, I hope people squirm a little bit.
Yeah.
There is a freedom that comes when a group of, no matter what, the people who are not white can talk to each other in a way that people who are white can't. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think it's actually – there's a very racially diverse group overall putting the show together. Mm-hmm. And that actually lends itself to talking about the racial issues. But what's disturbing – people should be disturbed that the person who created the language that we all quote about our ability to be free in this country owned other people and justified the ownership of those people for his own purposes. And he actually is – Deborah captures this in the – in the play, Thomas Jefferson refers to our country is built on slave labor. The plantation system was completely built on free labor and the ownership of other people. And our freedom as Americans now comes from the lack of freedom of people then. So why do we think we can undo it with a couple of generations? We spent more generations creating the problem than we have trying to undo it. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, the relevance, especially in an election year where there's so much veiled racism that's not really – well, I shouldn't say veiled.
It's not veiled.
It's not veiled anymore.
It's right out there in the open.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fundamental question people have been asking for the last 4 years, why do we call first a presidential hopeful and now a president? Why is Barack Obama the black president? Because he's half white. Why is it the black? Because it's the black you can see. Mm-hmm. And it's the black that people can target. We'd be a lot more uncomfortable, I think, if people called him the white president. What does that mean? Yeah, if he was just another white man running the country with really good skin.
Yeah. It's Jerry Rapier. He directs the production The Third Crossing. The playwright Deborah Threedy is with us. Dee Dee Darby Duffin plays Mildred Loving and other characters, Professor Sloan among them. Bob Nelson plays Thomas Jefferson. Kaylin West. Kaylin. See, I thought that sounded so obvious before, and now I'm wondering if that's the way. Kaylin West. We'll meet Kaylin, by the way. She plays Sally Hemings when we get back from a break. We'll meet Tom Jefferson and Sally Hemings when we get back. The Third Crossing opens tomorrow, runs through March 18th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. For tickets and information, call ArtTix at 801-355-ARTS or visit us at KUER.org/Radio West. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling the latest production of the Plan B Theater Company. It's a play that takes on the issue of race and relationships, race and love. The playwright Deborah Threedy calls her latest work The Third Crossing. It's the term that Thomas Jefferson used when calculating race. Third crossing was the point at which an interracial child could be considered white. We are talking about the play, which opens tomorrow, runs through March 18th. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. Deborah Threedy is with us here in the studio, along with Jerry Rapier, directs the production. Dee Dee Darby Duffin plays Mildred Loving and Professor Sloan and a number of other characters in the play. She's with us here. Bob Nelson plays Thomas Jefferson, and Kaylin West plays Sally Hemings. And Kaylin West, let me introduce you formally. She's making her debut with Plan B as well, the role of Sally Hemings. She's a senior at Weber State University in theater and anthropology. Wow, that's an awesome mix.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Well, I guess let me start with, you know, the play describes, and this is one of the things that's really intriguing about Sally Hemings. We don't know that. We know her as an historical figure. We know that she existed, and we know that she had children, and we know that there's DNA evidence. We can talk about all of that, but... Mm-hmm. We don't know anything about who she was and what she was like. And so as you took on this character, how did you treat her? I mean, like a blank slate? Or I mean, like, where did you start?
Well, completely a blank slate. And I think, as Deborah mentioned earlier, I ran up against the barrier of feeling like, what is my right to tell her story? Because I'm not African-American. I'm Colombian, actually, half Colombian. And, you know, so I kind of was apprehensive about this, going, okay, how do I approach this? You know, she was... this incredibly strong, conflicted woman that has gone through things that I can't even begin to understand, which, you know, has turned out to be quite a challenge for me. Trying to immerse myself in her reality has been a very not liberating, actually, but just eye-opening experience. I can't even begin to fully understand the things that she went through, and it's been a very humbling, honoring experience for me to put myself in her shoes and try to give her a voice, give her the opportunity that she never had.
You know, Professor Sloan says in the play early on that people tend to make of Sally Hemings what they want. She says the reading is more about them, really, than about Sally. What is Deborah Thierry, what does that mean to you?
Even if we think about Sally from a feminist perspective, and I tend to think about most things from a feminist perspective, do we think of her as this victim who, you know, had no ability to say no to Tom Jefferson? If, you know, I mean, he was old enough to be her father.
Yep.
Did she really want to go to bed with him?
Yep. Yep.
Did she have a choice about that?
Yeah.
So should we think of her as a victim? You know, on the other hand, if it's true and she was sleeping with Thomas Jefferson and having his children, even if she wasn't being given her freedom for that, she certainly was occupying a privileged position within the hierarchy of slavery. So, you know, did she feel powerful as a result of her liaison with Thomas Jefferson? Mm. Should we think of her as a liberated person within the confines of her time and her social class? So we read Sally
through our own filter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to make our own political and social points.
So, Kaylin, it seems like you had a choice. I mean, you had the text, of course, and that's fairly straightforward. But in some ways, like the way you carried yourself, you could have been traumatized. You could have been a victim. You could have been sort of hunched over and timid. You could have been defiant and proud. You could have been angry. You could have been sexy. I mean, you know, like you had a lot of different options. Did you feel like you had to pick one, or where did you end up?
I feel like it's a combination of all of it, particularly in her situation. I don't see how she could feel any one particular way. It's constantly a pull and give, this conflict. You know, at one moment she does feel powerful and sexy and strong about all this, but the next moment I feel like she would feel guilty and afraid and, you know, completely conflicted. And so I think there's little elements of each of that that come out in different situations with Tom and then with her mother and with Isaac. And there's constantly things pulling at her, but she's just kind of stuck in the middle of it, suspended in this tension.
Yeah. There's a scene, Jerry Rapier, help me take us into this scene. It's between Patsy, who is, of course, Thomas Jefferson's white daughter, shall we put it that way, mm-hmm. and Sally here. And it raises the question, how did it work in that household? What was the dynamic like? What did Patsy and the other members of the household know about Sally? And I mean, was it out in the open? Was it, you know, and what was the dynamic like? How was she treated? Set the scene up for us, if you would.
Well, in Deborah has a line through another character that tells us that it's their communal little secret, that the entire household is aware of the situation. It seems to be only Thomas Jefferson in the play that believes that everybody doesn't know.
And we know denial or something, right?
And we know people who come to the play will see this, and you can see it on our website too. There's a political cartoon from 1804 right. that was published in the newspapers that indicates that everybody knew. But in this scene, we see the dynamic of two women who really are sisters, who are basically the same age, trying to jockey for the future of their family. And both trying to decide if their family is the same family, even though it is biologically.
And Patsy is played by
Dina Marie Manzanares.
Dina Manzanares, mm-hmm. right. Here's a scene from The Third Crossing.
For God's sake, Patsy, I was 15. 15 and his slave. What was I supposed to do?
You could have stayed in Paris. In France, you were a free woman.
This is ridiculous. I don't owe you any explanations, Patsy. Here are your towels. The water in the pitcher is fresh. If there's anything else you need...
But instead, you come back here. Why? Because you love him? No, because you saw how you could use him.
I don't think you really care what my feelings are. What you can't admit, what sticks in your throat, is that he loves me.
What do you care if a slave loves her master? Aren't we supposed to love our masters? Master's home, Lord Almighty, you too kind to this poor slave. Love from a slave to a master, that's to be expected. That's a dog licking the hand that feeds her butt. If a master loves a slave, that's disgusting, that's perverted. He doesn't love you, he loves my mother. Yes, he loved your mother, but she died, and so he loves her sister. Say that again! You better get him to free you, Sally, because I'll sell you when he dies. I swear it. Sell you down south where you'll sweat in the cotton fields or in some fancy house in New Orleans, you and all your bastards. Shall I tell him that, Patsy? Tonight, when we're alone, when his hands are tangled in my hair, when his mouth is on my breast, when his sweat is mingled with my sweat, shall I tell him what you just said? I'm going to wash my hair. Send Suki up to help me, would you?
You know, Deborah 3D, this moment really reveals how difficult it must have been. But, you know, I have to also say, there's a lot of sex in, not in the play, but in the dynamic, you know? I mean, it's very lusty, mm-hmm. the language. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's really, and that defiance kind of, that like her sexuality is part of her defiance in some way. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the relationship between Thomas and Sally as we go, like what you make of it. But it couldn't have been easy, I guess, for Sally.
Absolutely not. I don't think it was easy for any black person in that community, time, situation.
Yeah.
Sally's life must have been incredibly complicated. And it wasn't just Sally. There were a lot of Sallys out there in the sense that she has to know. She does know that her mother is the result of a liaison between a black slave and a white master. She has to know that she was Tom Jefferson's white wife's half-sister. But this is never – you know, they go through this never saying it, never claiming that relationship, never acknowledging it. But it's there. How could it not be there? And how do you negotiate that on a daily basis? Don't know. Yeah.
Bob Nelson, how do you play Thomas Jefferson?
Like that has got to be.
I mean, it's like play Abraham Lincoln, play Thomas Jefferson. I mean, of course, actors have and they do.
Sure.
But it's he's so iconic, so beloved. So conflicted. How do you – where did you start?
Where did I start?
Yeah.
I started by reading a biography.
Really?
Once I'd gotten cast. I've said this in a blog somewhere recently. I've had the chance over the years to play iconic characters. And the first time one of those things happened to me, I thought, oh, absolutely not. There's no way I can do it. And then I figured, well, if I don't do it, some other – fallible, you know, improperly chosen person is going to do it. So why don't I? Why don't I just jump in and do it?
Right.
So I get all that behind me. And then the task is to get into the character as the character is presented in this particular text. And this is not the iconic Jefferson who is president of the United States and who is the author of the Declaration of Independence and the creator of those – the articulator of – and therefore the creator of those cherished ideals that we all hope and pray that we can embody as individuals and as a nation. Now, my task is the same in this play as in any play, to try to home in on the character as the playwright has given us the character.
Yeah. You know, the question came up before. Deborah was saying, you know, in some ways – we don't know what the nature of that relationship was.
That's right.
And Deborah, I'll ask you about the choice. You seem to settle on the fact that there was real love here.
Yes.
But there is that possibility that and he really, you know, he can be a bastard in this play.
Yeah.
And I wonder, playing him, did that make you like him more or less?
Sure, it makes me like him more. Because he's not this this marble
you never
statue
saw him
on
as
a pillar.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a real human being who has accomplished such amazing great good, and yet at the same time has horrific faults. He owned over 600 people over the course of his life. And maybe he inherited many of those, but still, for heaven's sake, he owned 600 slaves. Any given time, he owned, you know, 180 to 220, around 200 at any given time. He keeps these meticulous records of everything on the estate, hundreds of vegetables by name and when they're planted and when they're harvested and so on. I mean, and of course, all the property that he owns, including slaves.
Yeah.
But he doesn't say – he doesn't free slaves during his lifetime except for a tiny handful, all
three.
Related
–
three
to be
related to Sally Hemings.
Yes. Yeah.
He never freed Sally Hemings.
No.
So, it's a – I want to present him sympathetically. You know, all of us have our failings, and all of us somehow live with our failings. And we don't kill ourselves, most of us, in existential despair because of how far short we fall from our ideals. So likewise, Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find that humanity and the fully fleshed out humanity there.
Dipper 3D, I mean, you had a choice. I mean, you could have portrayed Sally as a victimized, intimidated...
Raped.
Yeah. I have to say, and this is how you put it in something you had written, it could have been unmitigated horror, a lifetime of rape, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
But – and of course you do portray this relationship as complicated for sure. But you do seem to have settled on the idea that there was love.
Yes. Can't exactly say why. Maybe it's a reflection of my own innate optimism. And I think that I am a person who tends to see the glass half full rather than half empty. So to me, if they loved each other, there's a glimmer of hope there that we can get beyond all this racial nonsense, that we can relate to one another as people rather than as a black or as a white, as a master or a slave. So I think it's my desire to be optimistic about the whole situation that leads me to decide on that.
That it was love. Kaylin, how do you describe the relationship between Thomas Jefferson and Sally?
Well, I agree. I think something just inside me says that there was love. There was something, there was a connection there. There was something special about it that kept her around and made it easier in the face of everything that she was up against. And I feel like when I think about the relationship between the two of them, I imagine it to be a pretty tender thing, a pretty genuine, beautiful, giving thing. And I think that that was important to her, and that was something that made her feel very grateful and powerful and beautiful, because she had something that a lot of people around her didn't. And I think defending that was the hard part, and trying to explain that to herself and those around her is what, you know, started the fire and the tension inside. But it was there, you know, whether she could explain it or not, it was there. There was a connection. There was something beautiful and real there.
And Bob Nelson, Thomas Jefferson is so he's conflicted, but he's so limited. I mean, there's a moment early on in the play where he says, "I can't, I just can't."
I can't free you.
I can't free you exactly. Yeah. You could play that as sort of poignant and conflicted, or this is just the way it works. I mean, how do you play it?
I think I'm a little evasive.
Yeah. You don't want to confront the reality.
No, I don't want to confront the reality, and I don't want to give an easy answer because there isn't an easy answer to it. Jefferson said no. If anybody asked him, I don't know if they did, but he didn't free his slaves. So no, and he's just playing it close to the chest for us to determine.
Yeah. That's Bob Nelson. He plays Thomas Jefferson in Deborah Threedy's play, The Third Crossing. Deborah's with us. Jerry Rapier directs the production. Dee Dee Darby Duffin plays Mildred Loving and Professor Sloan and others. We'll talk to her when we get back from a break. Kaylin West plays Sally Hemings. The Third Crossing opens tomorrow, runs through March 18th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. For tickets and information, call ArtTix, 801-355-ARTS is that number, or just go to our website for the particulars, KUER.org/Radio West. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with members of the Plan B Theater Company, the production called The Third Crossing. It's Deborah Threedy's play. We've been talking about it. It opens this week, runs through March 18th. We'll give you the details about that. We have with us Deborah Threedy, who wrote The Third Crossing. Jerry Rapier directs the production. Bob Nelson plays Thomas Jefferson. Kaylin West plays Sally Hemings. I introduced Dee Dee Darby Duffin earlier. And Dee Dee Darby Duffin, I wanted to ask you about some of the characters that you play. First of all, it's interesting, the role of Professor Sloan. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're the one that's sort of talking to the audience. You have this relationship with us. She's a feminist, academic. What do you figure – I mean, how are you thinking about that role? What is she trying to convey to the rest of us?
I think she's passionate about giving a voice to the voiceless.
Yeah.
I think she's very passionate about giving a voice to in particular, and then her chosen conduit is Sally Hemings. I think she wants Sally to have a voice because she didn't write any letters. She didn't leave any journals. I mean, there's nothing about her, and everybody who's ever heard about her, she's this historical figure, but if you've heard about her, you don't know anything about her. And so you kind of make your own judgments about her.
Yeah.
And you'll hear like tidbits like, well, she could have been free if she'd stayed in France. Why did she come back? And if she came back, then what was her relationship like with Thomas Jefferson? And so I think Sloan is trying to give you all of the pictures of Sally. I mean, when she was with Tom in the beginning, she was 15 years old.
Yeah.
But it lasted a long time. She had her last child with him when she was 35.
Wow.
So it was a long relationship.
Yeah. Is Professor Sloan skeptical? You know, how do you play her? Angry? How do you – because it's not – you're not just giving exposition. You're not just sort of, here are the details and now you guys act. I mean, this is a role for you.
Yeah.
So what is she? You know what I mean in that way?
She is passionate about giving women a voice.
Yeah.
That's how I play her.
Right.
I think she's
with
not
passion,
angry.
Intensity.
Yeah, with that intensity.
Yeah.
She's not angry about it, but she's trying to give you a, aha, what? Oh, well, this, yeah, think about that. Think about this in terms of, I mean, could she have been his lover for that many years and not have had any power? Or was she always just a victim? I mean, she's trying to make Sally three-dimensional,
yeah.
Not just this, she was a slave on this side, and then maybe when she went back home, she was the big boss of, her four kids. She was more than that. She was bigger than that.
Right.
She was this larger-than-life character. And I think Sloan is trying to give her, to make her less than a caricature of just Thomas Jefferson's mistress. I think she's trying to make her this whole person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deborah Threedy, why did we need Professor Sloan in the production? I mean, you could have just done it without that, right?
No, because if I just gave you Tom Jefferson and Sally Hemings, it would be too easy to say that's history.
Right.
I needed someone. She's a professor for a reason. She is educating the audience. And it happens at the beginning of the play because I want the audience to be educated before they get into the particulars of the Thomas Jefferson Sally Hemings story. Before we really, we've seen a little flash of these characters,
yeah.
But we don't really get into the details of their lives until after we have this introduction from Professor Sloan.
We've been talking about Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson, but this is one of the things that you yourself have talked about as this play was evolving as you were writing it. Like, at first it was history, but the thing that I guess completed it was when you brought it forward.
Absolutely.
Talk about that, if you would.
Probably the first – one of the first steps to bringing it forward was to start thinking about Mildred and Richard Loving, who are the bookend to Sally and Tom, okay? They are another interracial couple, and they are interracial in the same way that Tom Jefferson and Sally was, that is, a white man and a black woman. Their case went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court, and in 1967 resulted in an opinion called Loving versus Virginia, by which the Supreme Court said that all of these statutes that prohibited, made criminal, marriages between white and black people were unconstitutional. A tremendous watershed moment in our historical and cultural growth as a country. So I became aware that at the very least this arc had to go from Tom and Sally to Mildred and Richard.
Yeah.
Because, again, this is a little Pollyanna in me, right? Mm-hmm. Their story is the happy ending that Tom and Sally never had.
Right. I want to have Dee Dee read a scene from Mildred. Jerry, what can we say to set this up?
Well, one of the magical things that Deborah has done is Dee Dee plays Sally's mother, Professor Sloan, and then Mildred Loving. And so there's this connection of powerful black women through history that we get to see through Dee Dee. And in this particular moment, we've just seen Richard and Mildred tell us their story, that like maybe they've done hundreds and hundreds of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we discover right before this moment that Mildred's alone now. Richard died fairly young, and she and Mildred spent a lot of time, not necessarily with any desire to be, but she was the face of equality in this country for many, many people, and that's what she shares with us in this moment.
Here's another scene from The Third Crossing.
I've lived long enough to see big changes now, but some people. Well, Alabama didn't get around to repealing its Racial Integrity Act until the year 2000. You heard me right, 2000. All we ever wanted was to get married because we loved each other. And if we hurt some people's feelings, that was just too bad. That's their problem, not mine. Richard's gone now. He died in an automobile accident back in June 1975. A drunk driver slammed right into us. Seems like a lot of my memories are tied to the month of June. We got married on June 2nd, the court decision came on June 12th, and Richard was killed on June 29th. I married the only man I ever loved, and I'm happy for the time we had together. Not a day goes by that I don't think of Richard, and how much it meant to me to marry the person most precious to me, even if others thought he was the wrong kind of person for me to marry. I'm proud of our name on a court case about love and commitment and family in the face of such prejudice. I'm still not a political person, but government has no business imposing some people's religious beliefs over others. I support the freedom to marry for all, black or white, gay or straight. That's what loving is all about.
From The Third Crossing, that's Dee Dee Darby Duffin. Kind of comes back around to love, isn't it? I was struck by that, this questions of love, the ideas of love. Of course you intended that, I suppose, but it's nice to see.
Yep. Love is the answer.
Let me ask you, Kaylin West, I wanted to ask you about, there's a moment at the end. I'm not sure if we have time for you to read this. It's a lovely moment. Let's do it. Jerry, help me set this up. It's a moment at the end, and Thomas Jefferson is on his deathbed, and he has this really important question for Sally.
Yeah, he asks her if she loves him, which, I mean, there's really nothing more to say. It's the moment. It's the final moment. It's the last opportunity for them to be honest with each other.
Here's Kaylin West from The Third Crossing.
I could take the easy way, say yes, and be done with it. But you're pausing at the edge, Tom. I can see that. I can feel eternity in this room with us, and so it's no good taking the easy way. I owe it to you and to myself to be as honest as I can be. I love that you love me, that you want me, that you make babies with me. I love that in the night when you hold me, I can forget who I am. I love that little old me, a nothing, a black girl, a slave girl, that I can make the President of the United States moan with desire and need. I love that this man owns me, body and soul, owns me in the eyes of the law, and owns me in a way that is against the law. I love that we break all the laws every time we come together. I love what happens between us in the dark. And I hate it, too. Hate myself for wanting you, for wanting you to want me, and you for wanting me, for thinking you have the right to me, for having the right to me. And if all of these loves and hates mix together, all this passion and desire, if this is love, if this is what you mean when you ask me, do I love you, then yes, I do. I love you, Tom. I love you.
Jerry Pierre, let me ask you this finally. What's the conversation you're hoping people have as they walk out of the theater?
I just hope, first of all, that people want to talk about it and acknowledge the fact that our record with race in this country is abysmal, and certainly we don't have any right to be talking about human rights violations anywhere else in the world. The Trail of Tears, slavery, the Japanese internment, racial profiling since 9/11. I mean, we need to take a step back and learn to listen, and I hope that's what the play ultimately gets those who attend it to do, is just take a step back and listen and learn from those who actually are experiencing prejudice.
That's Jerry Rapier. He directs the production of The Third Crossing, the Plan B Theater Company. Deborah Threedy, of course, wrote the play. D.D. Darby Duffin plays Mildred Loving and Professor Sloan and a number of other characters. Bob Nelson plays Thomas Jefferson. Kaylin West, Sally Hemings. Thank you all very much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Third Crossing opens tomorrow. It runs through March 18th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. Go to our website for particulars about tickets, kuer.org/Radio West. Radio West, a production of KUER News. I'm Doug Fabrizio.